Right, Derek, I'm bursting for the toilet, so I'm going to cut this short because I'm
likewise
desperate. Right, guys, I'm going to head.
Ah, not too bad. Listen, I was having a wee bit of problems in the wrong format. My apologies. That used to Zoom calls with lockdown and all that shit. Sorry about that.
As soon as you put Zoom, I was like, oh God, he's in.
You can better than me. I'm a fucking Zoomer, like, you know what I mean? So.
The thought had crossed my mind, but I wasn't wanting to say there. I thought you were going to actually call my barbecue wanker there, but that's...
I was thinking that. Who's he going
to say? Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Net. Say that again. Fuck's sake. First episode of the new year, and we've fucked it already.
I'm off to a flyer.
And the stadium erupts in red, white, and blue. You've never seen anything like it.
Manchester, brace yourself.
Rangers are coming!
Hi everyone, and welcome to the next episode of the iReady podcast. As ever, I'm your host Derek, and with me is my co-host Dave. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm very well, Derek. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, and Happy New Year to all our listeners as well. We've also got a guest for the first episode of 2021, and welcome back to Fear No Foes, Craig McCrimmon.
How are you doing, guys? Happy New Year. Thanks again for having me on. Pleasure to be here.
You've become a regular now, so we're going to probably start getting you credits on this now, because I think this is the third time you've been on, Craig, and I think it's the most time we've had a guest on as well.
I think you're right, Derek. Aye, so that's you. You're now officially the guest that we've had on the most, mate, so make the most of it.
Well, that's I heard that, you know, this is my hat trick, and I've three times I get to keep you guys, eh? So that's it. Eh?
Oh, I'm glad we're doing this on Skype here, eh?
Exactly. No Zoom.
Yes, it's a happy new year, a sad new year, obviously, with the new lockdown restrictions as well, but we're going to try and keep it lighthearted. We've still got the football, and it's been rather glorious, hasn't it?
Yes, mate, it's been glorious, glorious, glorious. I'm really looking forward to getting into the games that we've got to cover, and it really is everything that we hoped that it was going to be. So, as I say, I'm sure we'll be covering the games very shortly, but we're all very happy bears at the moment.
I can't wait. I mean, what we're talking, 14 games, one in a row in the league. Absolutely phenomenal. So, all is well at the moment, guys.
And to think there was a time only a couple of years ago we were struggling to string three wins together in a row, eh?
That's right, Derek. It seems like an eternity ago, but it wasn't that long ago, so I think that's how there's a lot of us still trying to keep our feet on the ground at the moment and not get too carried away, but it's glorious at the moment. So, again, we keep saying it after every pod we've done recently, just long may it continue.
Yes, but we'll get into it anyway. We'll go down the tunnel and onto the pitch. So the first game we've got to cover was the last game of 2020. It was Wednesday the 30th of December, a 2-0 win away against St Mirren in the Premiership. We kind of avenged the cup quarter-final loss, didn't we?
Yeah, we did, mate. That's what I was hoping. I said that on the last episode. I was hoping that the players would remember everything that happened and would really go out and go for it. A wee bit tougher than what I was hoping, but certainly an excellent result regardless.
I think, again, like you say, when you've been knocked at the cup with them, which was a blow, none of us kind of seen that coming. I don't think the players kind of seen that coming either, to go back kind of so soon and come away with a 2-0. And it won a venue that, for whatever reason, we always seem to kind of make it difficult for ourselves in Paisley. And that, as I say, it was 2-0, fairly routine, so no, happy with that.
Yes. So we lined up with two changes from the Hibs game. We lined up McGregor, Tavernier, Goldson, Hellander, Barisic, Kamara, Davis, Hadji, Roof and Morelos. Rangers have made a mistake in their website and they've put Kamara in twice. Maybe that's why we won with an extra player on the pitch.
Exactly. Aye, superb.
He's so good, eh? He's everywhere. Eh?
You better not let any Celtic supporters see that, Derek. That's a, well, that's a big conspiracy theory, that one.
He was that good, as if there was two of them.
Saying nothing.
On the subs bench, we had McLaughlin, Bassey, Defoe, Itton, Ken, Zungu, Patterson, Barker and Balogun. Of note, McGregor was making his 400th appearance for Rangers as well. Incredible, and certainly proving his worth in the next game we've got to cover as well.
It certainly does. Aye. A fantastic achievement, really was.
But I know, 400 games, early two spells. I think the most impressive thing though is the level of consistency across that, the 400 games has been absolutely phenomenal, and he deserves every credit he gets, you know.
Yep. There was a minute silence before the game kicked off as well due to the passing of Jim McLean, so obviously well observed because there was no fans in the stadium to cause any issues, but not that there would be anyway. I think he was a feared and respected person either side of any aisle he walked down, wasn't he?
Yeah, it definitely was. He was known as a bit of a tyrant, but I think it was more just a trait of the sort of management styles of those days. Certainly didn't look like he'd be a guy that you would mess with or argue with, but had great success with Dundee United. You know, a legend there, completely always a difficult opponent, you know, any times, because I mean, I can still remember clearly teams playing against them, and you always knew that you were going to get a really, really difficult match. And if you look at some of the players that he brought through the Dundee United youth system, they went on to become like international players, is quite incredible. So as you say, Derek, not a team that we are fond of, but certainly full of respect for everything that he done. Quite a remarkable achievement. So some of the trophies that he did win with Dundee United. So as you say, impeccably received, and I think it would have been if the fans were there, you know, regardless. So
I think these guys have hit anyone he'd there, kind of, to be fair to him, you know, Scottish football legend. I think we all kind of look back on that, even the Dundee United's run to the UEFA Cup final, you know, back in the times when you didn't have a lot of live games, and I kind of remember watching the games around that time, and there wasn't the same kind of level of animosity, so you had a reasonable hope that they would do quite well. And obviously, if history had been a bit different, he might have ended up a Rangers manager, but obviously, he had a change of heart and turned us down, and you know, potentially that was maybe a regret if he had one. I mean, that could have kind of changed his managerial career a wee bit, but potentially just was at Dundee United for that wee bit too long. But certainly, as you say, some of the players he brought through and what he done for the game here is not to be sniffed at. So, God bless him, as they say.
And he might have ended up punching that journalist either. So.
But, that's a classic YouTube moment, classic YouTube club.
Into the game itself, though, it was quite a slow start from us, with little pace, little movement, and it had all the hallmarks of the cup game. St Mirren had early chances, especially one where McGregor spilled it. We then got to grips with the game around the 25th minute, where we gave St Mirren a wee bit more space, allowed them to come out, and it worked for us because we went a goal up a minute later with Roos scoring. But in the first minute, it was a quick snapshot from St Mirren. It was a comfortable save from McGregor. 11th minute, a cross in from the left by St Mirren, passed out to the edge of the box on the right, a shot on the deck, right at McGregor, who spills it. Then St Mirren player had a shot over the bar. It was a really dangerous move. Might have been a different situation if the player had a wee bit more shooting boots on, but you know, certainly it wasn't looking good for us early on.
No, as you said, Derek, I thought that we would have came sort of all guns blazing, and then when I saw that the way the game was going, I thought, right, okay, I think we just need to try and, you know, try and take control of the game first, and then, you know, sort of take it from there. But as you say, they certainly did come out, you know, to start off looking quite menacing.
I think the last sort of a few games, I think there's maybe a slight concern that, you know, we've not started as sharp as we have, you know, previously. We are kind of trying to kind of, feels like, feel our way into games a wee bit. And, you know, as you say, with that spilled shot from McGregor, you know, the boy finishes that, and then, you know, suddenly the cup game kind of comes flooding back into focus. So I think there has been a couple of signs just lately that a wee break and maybe just another a wee kind of sharpening up might be required. But certainly, I think once we got out of that initial scare, and as Dave's saying there, kind of go to grips with the game, Our quality shines through, which is good. We always feel like we can score a goal, so you're never too panicky, you know.
The 25th minute, Hadji with a free kick on the edge of the box on the left. It went wide of the post. However, a minute later, on the 26th minute, we went a goal up with Roof scoring. Absolutely brilliant from Hadji, picking up a loose ball that ricocheted off two St Mirren players deep in the St Mirren half. He drove the ball forward, passed the Roof in the box on the right side, who had a first-time shot, deflected off the boot of the defender and into the back of net. Don't care how they scored, as long as they go a bit in the net, that's the main thing.
No, definitely, Derek. And as I say, you can't score, you know, without having a shot like that. It was an intentional shot from Roof, and it went in. I'm really been delighted recently with the way that Hadji's came back into the team and sort of really given us that wee, you know, bit extra. We all know that he's got the ability, he's got great vision, he's passing all of that. So just pleased to see him back in. That'll do him the world of good. And as I say, Roof scoring another one. And again, you know, we really don't care. Exactly what you said, we really don't care how they're going in, just to get the breakthrough. Because I feel that once we do go ahead in games, we don't look back after that. And I was just absolutely delighted to get the breakthrough in the first half.
I think the inclusion of Hadji was pretty clever for the manager. I think Kent was looking like he'd need a wee rest, certainly ahead of the Celtic game. And Hadji has, as you've touched on there, just started to come into a wee bit of form. I think the manager's managed him well. He was trying a wee bit too hard of late, and things just weren't. He was trying things, and it wasn't coming off. And you could kind of see him getting frustrated. But he's just kind of took a wee bit of a back seat. You can see he's been working on things in training, and he looks a lot more confident. And you know, when he's on his game, to be fair to him, there's no really many others that can do that wee bit extra, that he can do that, kind of unlocking their defence and seeing a wee pass that's not there. So I think it's just coming at the perfect time, you know, him hitting form just at the right time of the year. And absolutely crucial with that goal. And to see Roof score again, I mean, what a signing he's turning out to be. Again, that's what I was touching on, that wee bit quality. When we show it, it's making a difference at the moment, which is great.
I think the thing with Hadji is he's almost been a victim of his own success from last year, where he certainly in the second part of the season last year, he was the standout of a team that was largely failing. And I think everybody was expecting him to kick on this season and be the exact same.
Aye.
Where he's, as much as he's not been bad, he's always been trying, he's always worked, he's still provided a good number of assists. He's just not been that goal scorer we've seen last year and the creative spark going forward. But at the same time, as I said, he's been working hard and he's been doing all the right things up until maybe the last kick of the ball, where he's tried to either hit a shot and it's went wide, or he's just got the pass mixed up. But now, once he's kind of taken a wee step back, he's came back in. As you said, he's been sharp, he's been on the ball, and he's like Craig said, he's been managed well by the look of it. So long may it continue.
I know, definitely, Derek. I think me and you said it right at the start of the season. He was a player that I had projected to be one of your sort of star players, just with the way that, you know, the second half of the season went for him last season. Just exactly like what you said, he was like the sort of standout player for us, but didn't quite work out. But just pleased, exactly just like what Craig says there, we seem to be getting his form at the right time right now, and it's given us that wee extra, you know, boost for the team. It's given us another option, and it's working out well at the moment. So again, well played to the manager for getting him back on form.
Talking of players hitting the form at the right time, on the 32nd minute, Morelos makes it 2-0 up, and I think that was his first goal in 3 months or something like that, was it not?
Quite incredible, Derek. We've all been willing him on, haven't we? We all love the guy. We really do. We all want him to do well. I think he's changed this season. I think his overall play has improved. I think the problems that he causes the opponent's team is quite incredible. The runs that he makes, the wee flicks, dragging defenders away. So I think we'd all accepted that he wasn't, you know, he wasn't scoring a lot of goals, but the goals that he was creating for the rest of the team were incredible. And we were just delighted that he was back on the goal hunt, because I think for him, he needs to be able to score himself to, you know, to feel, you know, at the top of his game. And I'm just delighted, especially with the Celtic game coming up. I think it was, you know, great for his confidence, the fact that he scored. And it was a fantastic goal that he scored as well.
I know he kind of read the play well. He just picked up on that slack back pass. But with the kind of goal scoring form he's been in, he was running through, and you're thinking, oh, surely no, he's got to score. But it was a nice, composed finish, and I think that the actual having a bit of time to kind of process what he wanted to be doing has helped him. A few of the chances he's had that's been, you know, wee half chances, and he's been snatching at them, and they've been hitting the goalkeeper and going wide. But again, certainly we'll come on to it, but you know, certainly some of the touches and that, without going to having the Celtic game to get back into the goal trail, again, that's happened just at a nice time for us. I think it was inevitable that he would get back amongst the goals, but when you say it 3 months without one, that was it's hard to believe after his exploits the past few seasons. Yeah. But great to see.
Yeah, the goal itself, St Mirren midfielder strangely passing back to his own defender from the halfway line. The defender tries to then pass it back to the keeper, but he fluffs it. Morelos was brilliant and alert, and he nips in to get the ball. He drove it forward. He still had a lot of work to do, and then he slots it to the near side of the goal past the keeper. Just great all round, great vision, and perfect execution.
Yeah, it was, Derek. I think we spoke about it in the last sort of few podcasts. I think we had used the euphemism of touching the keep Kenny Miller's about a few of his chances. Kenny Miller was great at scoring impossible goals where he didn't have any time to think about it, but a lot of the time when he had a lot of time in his hands, you know, he would fluff it. And that was what we were hoping wasn't happening when Morelos there. And thankfully, it wasn't the case there, because as you say, he had a lot to do still. But the awareness for him, he picked the ball up, drive at it, and no panic and no do what he's done quite a few times and just blast the ball, just like Craig said, really composed, knew exactly what he was doing, as calm as anything, and slotted it away. So again, like I said before, just delighted for him, because it's just great to see him back on the goal trail.
And let's be honest, an Alfie goal seems, I don't know what it is, maybe it's just me, but a Morelos goal for Rangers just feels better than most other goals for Rangers. You love the wee guy, you know what I mean?
So into the second half, kind of expecting more of the same. St Mirren started, though, fairly well again. In the 49th minute, they were driving the ball on the left-hand side. They got the ball into the box, had a shot at an angle. McGregor stood up to it and blocked it and out for the corner. 53rd minute, yellow card for the St Mirren player who caught Goldson in the face with an elbow. I initially thought it was harsh, but on looking back at it, he clearly knew where Goldson was as well. It was a yellow card given, but there's no been any upgrades to a red card by the compliance officer, Kel Surprise.
Yeah.
54th minute, good passage of play, getting the ball into the box. Kamara wins a loose ball on the edge of the box, feeds it to Morelos on the left, tries to curl a shot, a save from Jack Anik, falls to Hadji at the back post, who tries to cross it back in. How the defender gets the block in and eventually not clear. 72nd minute, corner in from the left, Goldson got ahead to it, went to roof near the back post, puts a cross in, but it was cleared off the line. 73rd minute, that was Roof's last passage of play, because he came off and Kent came on. It was good to see that Kent was dropped for this game, because I think he was needing a wee spell on the bench, because something just wasn't clicking for him. He's been trying enough, but he's been cutting inside, he's been taking the easy route out, he's been back passing, he's not been doing the usual what he's known for, taking on players, getting down the wing and crossing it in. He's always been cutting inside, which has been disappointing.
That's right, Derek. I'm not saying it's as good for him to not be in the team, but it does give other players there an opportunity to come and showcase what they can do, with the likes of Hadji coming in and playing in that front three with Roof and Morelos. It gives, you know, the opposition something different to think about. Also, the one thing that I was saying, as you know, you'll get on to soon, was what happens now for the Celtic game, is it, because Kent, 9 times out of 10, has been a thorn in their side and played well. And it was the one thing that I was thinking, does he stick to Hadji up front with the, you know, Morelos and Roof, or, you know, does he bring Kent back? But you'll get into that in a wee while. So, but I know it's good, and it shows you again the strength of squad that we've got the likes of Kent on the bench as well. So, you know, just really good, and maybe keeps his hunger up a wee bit to show him that he's not an automatic start every game.
I think there is an element as well, just remembering the age of some of these guys. I think, you know, I mean, they are still young players. They've all, you know, hit levels in kind of poor form. And as you say, it's nice that Kent has struggled in a few of the games recently. He comes out, Hadji comes in and as well. And obviously that's what you need within a squad. And like you say, that's what will keep the hunger high. The guys know that they're no guaranteed to start, regardless of their name. So, aye, that's ideal moving forward.
Regardless of their name or their price tag, I suppose, as well.
Yeah.
And the 79th minute, there's a good build-up play, starting with Kamara stretching to get the ball. He knocks it forward. The ball worked to Morelos, who plays a fantastic ball in the box on the right to feed Hadji, who tries a cross-come shot at a tight angle, but it flashes by the goal. And last 2 points on the game was in the 79th minute, Hadji off and Zungu on. 88th minute, Tavernier off and Balogun on. And that's how the game rounded out. So delighted to get the result. Maybe not the best of performances, but it was 3 points.
Yep, Derek, exactly. I mean, we've been saying that one game at a time. It's all we've been saying. It's, you know, we've been trying to keep our feet on the ground. One game at a time. One victory at a time. I think we said it maybe about 4 games ago, win the next, you know, 5 games, you know, and we would be absolutely delighted, trying not to look forward. And as I say, we've been taking it one game, keep going. And we said it last week again, the next 2 games were going to be difficult, but we're hoping, like I said, that we were going to take heart from the cup defeat and go out and, you know, hammer them. A difficult game, but again, just absolutely delighted. Very professional, the way that we went about it as well, especially in the second half, because although the tempo dropped, I still think that we were well in control of the match, and, you know, that's what we're looking for, protect the lead that we've got and, you know, see the game out. I'll take that, you know, for every game at the end of the season.
And I think the grand scheme of things, it was a big, big 3 points in light of who's coming along next. To have dropped anything there, even a draw heading into that, the Celtic game, could have just changed the whole kind of mood of the camp. So to get the 3 points up the road relatively unscathed is really what you want with these kind of, so what should be, routine games.
So into the next game now, the big one, Saturday the 2nd of January. It was a 1-0 win at home against Celtic in the Premiership. It's just, what can you say about this game? It was like watching a game from Walter Smith in the 90s, wasn't it?
Derek, when I got a text message for you just as the game started saying, I've got a really bad feeling about this, I'm like, oh my God, here we go. I was night shift the night before, so didn't get a lot of sleep. I set my alarm to get up just before the game started, and the first thing that I read is that message for you, and I'm saying to myself, oh God, what's happened? Has there been an injury? Is there something? I didn't see the team sheet. As you're about to get into it with the team news, the one thing that I was thinking of, there was two actually, who is going to play in defence? Is it going to be Hellander or Balogun? Or who's going to play up front? Is it going to be Kent, or is it going to be Hadji, or something different? That was the two questions I had. I wasn't feeling here nor there, Derek. I wasn't confident, but at the same time I wasn't dreading the game as well. I was just going to see what was happening. But you're going to get into the game. I've got a lot of talking points in the game. I'll let you know my feelings about a few of them, but just delighted that we did win the match.
Yeah. Obviously, on a more somber note though, the game was probably more poignant and more fitting for the fact that it was the 50th anniversary of the Ibrox disaster. Obviously Rangers had a lot of plans to commemorate it. I think they were trying to hold a big service, but obviously due to COVID plans that had to be postponed. Obviously a lot of tributes all around Scotland, all around Britain in fact as well. And it's just a very sad reminder of what went on, and a sad, tragic accident, and they'll always be remembered.
Yep, totally, Derek. And as I say, for the fact that all the plans couldn't be done, I think the club done an excellent job regardless. And as you say, even more with the fact, you know, who we were playing today made it even more important that these fans were remembered. So, you know, well done to the club. And as I say, as you said as well, Derek, hats off to Celtic as well for the tributes that they made as well. The fact, you know, they came out with a wreath and that before the game as well. So,
yeah, I think just echo what you guys say, just a really sad point in our history that, I think the club, to be fair, every year do a very good job of remembering those unfortunate 66 souls. And I think the poignant thing for me was that we not having any fans in the ground to me was actually quite a nice tribute that you know, some of these 66 might have still been in attendance to that game. So the fact that, you know, COVID prevented us all getting in, I think it was a nice, quiet, sort of poignant moment. And I think the club have, as you say, I think they've done really well to do what they could within the confines of COVID. We'll always remember them. I'm sure we'll have plans for it again next year.
Yeah, and I think Rangers are still trying to, you know, obviously COVID permitting, and the club are going to try and get something organised, like a service or something like that. So it'll just be a case of watching the space. But it's not really an easy way to transition from that. But the game itself, there was two changes from the St Mirren game, and it's the kind of players we kind of expected that might get changed. We lined up McGregor, Tavernier, Goldson, Balogun was in for Hellander, Barisic, Davis, Kamara, Aribo, Kent came in for Hadji, Roof and Morelos. On the subs bench were McLaughlin, Bassey, Hadji, Defoe, Itten, Zungu, Barker, Hellander and Patterson. So you kind of knew that was going to happen with Kent, didn't you? Where he always likes playing against Celtic, and it's a shame for Hadji because I felt he'd earned his place.
He did, Derek, but as you say, and it's one of these things, I think we all, every single one of us would say you can't leave Kent out of this game because he always has a good game against them. He's been a thorn in their side quite a few occasions now. I think he's actually a player that they fear or are wary of because they know that he's done it against them, you know, quite a few times, especially at Parkhead. He seems to flourish when he plays there. So we couldn't leave him out. And as you say, there was a player that had to get sacrificed there, and it was Hadji, unfortunately. But as I say, he had a huge part to play in the second half, which we'll get into later on, Derek.
So I wasn't too surprised. Obviously, as you say, we Kent coming back in. I thought he might have actually been a home game. I think he might have actually found space for the two of them. I kind of had a wee inkling before the game that Aribo might have dropped out. I don't think in the last few games Joe Aribo's been in particularly great form. I think Kent was always going to come back in, but I was a wee bit surprised not to see Hadji. I thought you might have squeezed the two of them in, but obviously wasn't it to be.
I think we wish you were right, to be honest, given the way the game played out. But in the first half, I think the only highlight for us was that we didn't concede. It was extremely poor. Celtic were completely on top. We never turned up at all. We were second to every ball. We were lethargic, timid, poor passing, poor first touch. Couldn't retain possession at all. Credit to Celtic, though. They were playing a very high press, chasing every single ball, forcing us back into our own half and making mistakes. And you've got to expect that was going to happen because the game arguably meant more to them than it did to us because they had to win. You know, a draw would have not been amazing, but it certainly would have suited us better than it would have suited them. They had to go for it, and that's what they did. And so you've got to give them credit for the way they played. They found this new diamond system that apparently does wonders for them. But as in the press conference beforehand, you know, Gerrard came out and said that, well, yeah, fair enough, they've beat Dundee United, Hamilton, Ross County, but now they're coming up against Rangers. So that's all that had to be said there, and a bit of gamesmanship, a bit of mind games there, but maybe that played into the way the game panned out in the end.
I'm not sure, Derek. I don't know if there was a wee bit of complacency there for our players, because a lot has been made of Celtic playing that formation, and the first thing, all that I've seen and heard from other Rangers fans is, oh well, that's, you know, if they play the diamond, we'll absolutely destroy them down the wings. Both Tav and Barisic are going to have a field day, and that's all I heard. And, you know, I heard everybody saying that they'll have to change the way that they play against us, and maybe there was a wee bit of complacency there by our team, I don't know. They maybe thought it was going to be a lot easier than it was. But as you say, Celtic seemed to be first to every ball. And what was annoying for me was that we couldn't seem to keep a hold of the ball. So something that we've, you know, done all season, we've been able to keep a hold of the ball, quick passing right through, you know, three or four very quick passes in a game. We couldn't do that against them in the first half. And it was really disheartening. And, you know, they really did set them apart from us in that game, the fact that they could press us so well. And I just honestly don't think our players were expecting it.
Like you say, it was a wee bit disappointing from your point of view that we couldn't play through their press, because, you know, we have come up against that, you know, in European games and scored some really cracking goals off of sort of beating a high press. So that was disappointing. I think, though, When you actually look on reflection, you know, if you watch the game back, look, there's no question that Celtic were on top. And we were very poor in the first half, just know ourselves for all the reasons we've touched on there. But if you actually look, by contrast to us, and we'll come on and touch on it, but so at one side, Laxalt, and the other side, Frimpong, we're pressing on really, really well, getting high up the pitch. But the difference between them and us this season, and it's a marked change, is that the quality of delivery for their two fullbacks was just pretty much non-existent. So they had a lot of territory, but if you take the sort of double save where the second one was actually offside and McGregor's made an unbelievable save, and then obviously the chance will go into shortly with Griffiths. For all their possession, again, I can hold my hands up and say I was sitting watching the game, my wife's gone absolutely apoplectic, and I actually felt quite relaxed that I didn't feel we were going to lose this game 3-4 or 5-0 here. By contrast, I felt, well, this is their best swing. And to be fair, bar a couple of chances, they didn't look like they were going to cut us to ribbons and score loads of goals, as poor as we were.
I think you're spot on, as you said, we'll get into that. Second minute, though, the first chance that you were talking about there, it was a driving run from Celtic through the middle, drifting to the left. Edouard gets the ball, hits a shot at an angle, and McGregor makes a fantastic save near post. Rebounds back out to Edouard, who had another shot, another great save, probably even better than the first one, but it was ruled offside in any case. So right from the off, we knew this was going to be a tough game, and McGregor called into action early on, and we thought, here we go, is this going to be a repeat of the cup final, but in reverse this time, where it was our keeper that was going to be making save after save after save. Fourth minute, Morelos left one on Frimpong, a nonsensical part of the pitch. It should have been a booking. He got away with it. We were lucky there, weren't we?
Yeah, it was. As you say, he made his mark early on the player, Derek, and I think if it had been, you know, even 10, 15 minutes into the game, he would have got a yellow card there. So he was very fortunate that he got away with that one.
Now, again, he was definitely lucky. It was a booking all day long. But I think he's been fortunate that, and I'm sure we'll come on through it, but I think Bobby Madden was, you know, trying to manage the game. And I think he has done that pretty well. I'm sure the flip side will be that we'll go into the sort of second half. The logic for your friends across the city is that, mm-hmm, two yellows would have made a red for Morelos, but he's set bookings in, you know, the comedy cut stuff, you know, as we'll come into. So, yeah, it should have been a booking, but again, the referee's done the right thing. You start flinging cards about in that game and, you know, it's ruined as a spectacle. So, for that respect, we were lucky on the movie.
Yep. Fifth minute, poor attempted clearance by Balogun, right to the Celtic player who squares it to Griffiths in the middle, who has a quick shot, slight deflection, and forces another good save from McGregor, who spills it, comes to the Celtic player, who again was ruled offside from the initial shot. So, second attempt, you know, within 5 minutes there.
Yeah.
12th minute, Celtic with a 20-yard shot, but wide of the post. 19th minute, a good passage of play from us, working the ball around the final third, retaining possession. Aribo crosses into the middle from the right. Morelos with a play shot and deflected off the defender and cleared. And in the 21st minute, an incredible save from McGregor, a world-class save from a curling shot outside the box from Griffiths. It was going into the top left corner. McGregor got his fingertips to knock it onto the post and out. And the first thing he done wasn't just kind of collect himself or scream at his defence. It was, it hit the post, it hit the post.
He has seen that, yeah. You don't have to look at Griffiths. Griffiths shot and thought he'd scored. You know, he couldn't have hit that any better. Going right into the top corner, and for McGregor to be able to pull that save off, absolutely sensational. I think you made the point on a tweet there, Derek, about and Andy Gorham. It was sensational. I don't know how on earth he managed it, because it was just everything happened so quickly, so the reactions were incredible. And as you say, just an absolute world-class save at that point, and really keeping us in the game, which is what he's there to do. I'm not going to take it in any of this nonsense. If it wasn't for your goalkeeper, he's with a go beat. That's his job. But it was an absolutely outstanding save.
What made the save is, you watch it back, his footwork was excellent. You know, if he'd just done what I guess inferior goalkeepers would do, would be the shot would come in and they'd launch their cell at it, and then, you know, it finds the top bag. But the fact that you see him, he's took a couple of quick steps and then he's launched his cell. It was an absolutely brilliant save. Your goalkeeper, you know, is kept in it, as you've said. That's his job. That's what he's there to do. And you know, he's an integral part of the team. And yeah, and just shows you that the game where we've maybe not been so fluent and we have struggled. And the defence and the goalkeeper have held firm. You know, the amount of clean sheets we've had is for no reason. I think that was probably highlighted the most at the weekend, to be honest.
Yep, and any Celtic fans listening in, that was pretty much your highlights of the game, because you had 3 shots on target and that was it the whole game. Granted, 2 great saves and 1 world-class save, and that's all McGregor had to do. Granted, yes, you had a lot of possession and you made our defence work, but that's the whole point. The defence worked. You never broke us down other than that. If yous were that good in this game, yous would have broke our defence down. So
calm down, Derek. Calm down. Come on. Enjoy this. Come on.
I guess what we're trying to do is there's been a lot of spin put on it that, yep, you know, we were terrible and they were aware of us and, you know, they played us off the park. And I'm sorry, but any fair-minded person who goes back and looks at the game, I'll know that that's not the case. You know, as you've touched on, that 3 shots on target is not a dominant performance for a team. You know, they've worked their goalkeeper, they have put us under pressure. But you could notably see as the first half went on, their bench getting animated, frustration kicking in, because they knew that was plan A was plan B for them. You know, they've changed their formation, they've tried to hit us with something new, and it wasn't coming off. You know, and you could see that seeded out. I think the belief almost started to come out of Celtic when McGregor was starting to make these saves. They're thinking, we can't score here, you know. And I thought it was lovely to see, to be fair.
Again, shades of the 90s with Andy Gordon.
100%. The comparisons are great there to draw, you know.
Yeah. So the last piece of play, I mean, was not until the 45th minute where Celtic had a corner in. It was headed just wide of the post. I mean, granted, they had a lot of possession. They were making our defence work, but our defence were standing up to it, and they were basically impenetrable after that. Into the second half, we were obviously looking for something better, and it did take a wee while. We did make a change at half-time as well, Roof off and Hadji on. We thought it was tactical, but it turned out Roof had picked up a wee knock, I think, in his thigh. I don't think there's been any further details about that, has there?
No, I was surprised at that as well, Derek. He wasn't really involved much in the game, which I've actually been quite critical of Roof. I'm trying not to be, but I have been, and I was, you know, basically saying, well, it's not that he's had a bad game, it's just, you know, we kind of get him involved in the game. I thought, like you, it was a tactical thing, but then when I heard it was actually a knock, then, you know, it's one of these things. But there hasn't been anything said, so I'm taking it can't be anything serious that, you know, we've not heard anything.
Even if it was for a knock, it was a tactical masterstroke, because Hadji started to put a lot more influence on the game after that as well. So certainly the right player to bring on, and again, comes back to the question, should have been starting in the first place?
Again, though, we have got the squad, and I think maybe Steven Gerrard is being more proactive when it comes to making subs, knowing things, you know, that maybe aren't working. And I know that was an injury, but again, it goes back to the fact that we have got a much stronger squad now, and, you know, to bring a player like Hadji on. And I do think he changed the game for us, Derek. I think he swung the momentum our way. Certainly got us, you know, on the front foot a lot more. So, you know, it was a great sub to make.
I think, to be fair, I think he would have came on anyway. Maybe not for Roof, but I think the way the first half went, especially with the 5 subs, I think Gerrard's kind of demonstrated this season now that kind of previous reluctance to make a change is kind of gone now. I think he would have made a tactical switch. I think Hadji would have came on, and certainly, as we'll go into guys, I think he definitely turned the game for us. And I would go as far as to say he's kind of played his sale in, you know, for the coming game against Aberdeen, you know. But no, he was very good when he came on.
Yeah. 50th minute, a good passage of play ending in Hadji dropping the shoulder outside the box on the right, hits a shot but went well wide of the left post. And in the turning point of the game, 62nd minute, a straight red card for near beaten. The ball, a simple ball played down the right wing by Tavernier to Morelos. He was clear in on goal, but Beaton grabbed him from behind in a rugby tackle and brought him down. A red card every day of the week for clearly a goal scoring opportunity.
Derek, do you know how you know it was a red card?
Because Andy Walker said it was.
No, I was going to say, because Michael Stewart said it was. It's, there you go. Any nonsense for any of that mob over there to say that. And again, I think this comes back to Neil Lennon as well, saying that it was going to get covered. The guy, you know, the other player, I think it was Ayer, was miles away. He kind of contradicted himself a wee bit, Lennon, when he was complaining about it, because he says, yeah, he would have got a shot away, but it wasn't a clear goal-scoring opportunity. You know, absolutely farcical. We all know Morelos, if he had got, you know, they got that ball, if he'd have went anywhere near that box, he would have struck that ball, he'd hit it as hard as he could. So it was a clear goal-scoring opportunity. The other Celtic defender wasn't getting back, and it was the correct call for the referee. I don't care what anybody says.
It's a riddle all day long. I think the thing for me, though, is it was a clear difference for the first half in terms of, you know, Tavernier and Barisic didn't have their best games. But I think it's not to be overlooked that Tavernier's obviously spotted that opportunity with Morelos kind of looking to spin in behind, and they played a nice ball down the wing. As soon as he was past him and he's put him down, it's a red card all day long. But I think what it highlights for me is a difference between the two teams this year. When we showed even just a little bit of intent, the scar tissue for them kicked in and they went into panic mode, and what's happened is they've pulled a player down for a red card. You know, I think if they're coming off the back of better form or having beat us at Parkhead earlier in the season, he maybe doesn't make that decision. But you know, I think that demonstrates that we are definitely kind of in their heads a wee bit now, which is great.
Yep. From the resulting free kick as well that came from that, the ball was floated into the box right to the head of two players and they both missed. It was a gilt-edged chance that if they had just stuck their neck out a wee bit, then there would have been a bullet into the back of the net, wouldn't it have been?
Yeah, totally. I think it was Hadji was one of the players you'd expect him just to pop that in. Great chance, but I think, Derek, at that point, when that went in, you know, everything that was happened, I think we all knew there was, you know, a turn here. I think we all knew deep down this, you know, we've got this. If we just add a wee bit of more pressure, they're going to crumble. It was just a sign straight away. But as you say, we were expecting the net to bulge there because it was a great delivery in and, you know, really gilt-edged chance there. Really surprised they missed it.
Quality delivery. And again, by contrast, you look at your player, your full-back puts a great ball in. For a dead ball, all the first half they got any great positions, but the delivery was poor. The difference was is it was a bit sharp. It was into that area with the pun that's all called that corridor of uncertainty. The goalkeeper doesn't want to come, although Barkas probably wouldn't come anyway out there. But in panic, it is a fundamental step change in our play that we are dangerous in offensive positions, which again we showed. So I think for all we were poor in certain aspects of the game, when we did have chances, although it doesn't bear fruit in the shots on target column, we were dangerous and we carry a threat which ultimately sees us through, you know.
Celtic went a wee bit more defensive after that. They brought on Scott Brown, they brought on Shane Duffy, I think, as well at that point. And, you know, I think from that point, as you said, you knew there was a turn and Celtic were, I think, maybe damage limitation at that point. But it certainly never worked because on the 68th minute, Barisic with a free kick from 25 yards on the right, it was headed off the wall and out for the corner. And from that resulting corner on the 69th minute, we went 1-0 up with an OG. The corner in from the right, Aribo gets a slight head to it, hit off the arm of McGregor and into the back of the net. Again, take them every which way they come.
Doesn't matter. It could have went on off Scott Brown's arse, Derek, and I really wouldn't have cared. I was jumping about like mad, absolutely delighted that we had scored, and you just could see them just totally, that was their heads down at that point. They knew that they weren't going to get anything for that game for that point, and just a great time to score not long after the sending off, and, you know, really starting to turn the screw. Perfect time for us to score. And just at the back post there, if that had kept on going, Morelos was unmarked just to tap it in the back post. So I thought at first it was Aribo's goal until I seen the replay. But as you say, Derek, really no caring who scores it or how it goes in.
Again, the other theme, again, you talk about contrast between teams and differences that ultimately lead to championship winning sides potentially, is that one sort of opportunity there and the contrast and the goalkeeper. I mean, for all that it took a deflection, you know, I mean, I mean, what's his dive? You know, it's really hard to explain how poor he was. But again, let's not take away from as we were touching on there, the back stick. Alfie's ready for a tap in. I'm surprised he never just launched his cell at it and stole the goal. But no, again, a quality delivery and it sparks panic. So no, again, great.
And I think one thing that's been missed out of this as well is that if you watch the goal back, as the corner was coming in, Goldson was running into the box. Duffy has got a handful of the top of his shirt the whole way, dragging him into the box. It should have been a penalty if it wasn't going to be a goal. Whether it would have been given, I'm not too sure. Doubtful, but certainly it was a penalty for me, even if it never went in.
Yeah, as I say, irrelevant now though, Derek. The goal was in, but it'd have been interesting if it hadn't have been. But again, we just knew that there was going to be some calamity with Duffy coming on. That's how I was hoping that we were really going to put the pressure on him at that stage, because he's certainly looking as dodgy and shaky as you can get. Going back to the likes of Brown coming on, as we'll get into soon, was Brown brought on to try and wind folk up, do you think, to try and get somebody sent off? Because it looked to me as if he was just there to target players to, you know, try and land one on to try to get. I mean, that's basically all Brown is these days, is just a wind-up merchant on the park. And I genuinely thought that when he came on, because he never made any difference to the Celtic team at all. And basically the only talking point is I'm sure about to get into, Derek, is what happened, you know, with the Stramash after that. So I genuinely believe that, because I don't think he's got anything to offer these days, and he is just there to try and wind folk up.
Yeah, I think that's the exact thing, and we'll all get into that in a second.
Yeah, aye.
71st minute, Lacks out with a late boot on Tavernier, a free kick given, but no yellow. It was certainly a yellow card worthy, and it would more than match the thing that Morelos done in the first half, so that kind of evens that one out there. 73rd minute, it was a break of the ball for Celtic. Elanusi gets the ball on the edge of the box, and it's a first-time shot, and it went just over the bar. 74th minute, this is where this handbags come into it. Duffy had a really bad challenge on Kent, I think it was. He got a yellow, but it arguably could have been a red, because there was no attempt to play for the ball as well. You've seen with the intent he went in from behind as well. Certainly there was a case for the red. Morelos and Brown and others got into a bit of a handbags. Morelos got a yellow along with Callum McGregor for Celtic. However, the most controversial thing about the whole situation there is Scott Brown chucked his head into the arm of Morelos to try and make out as if he got punched, and then went away greeting like a wee silly wee lassie, trying to get somebody else booked or sent off. And well, arguably it worked, because Morelos got the yellow card. Granted, Morelos got himself involved when he should have just backed off, because he did run over to the situation. But for what Brown done there is an absolute embarrassment. The guy calls himself the captain of Celtic, and they hail him as this sort of messiah within Celtic. He's the luckiest Celtic player of all time for the fact that what he's had to come up against. It is just an embarrassment. He knows he's no longer got the legs. We certainly got the better of the two players between Thompson and Brown. Brown had, and I'm saying this in the past tense, had some qualities, and he was a good player, but nowhere near as good as what the Celtic fans and the media make him out to be. He's an absolute embarrassment now.
That was, as I say, I'm going back to what I said though, Derek. That, you know, as soon as he came on, I thought he's there to wind up Morelos, trying to get a reaction or something. But at the same time, Derek, it did work, because after that, as soon as Morelos got booked, we all said he'll hate to come off here, because he's getting wound up and Brown's just going to target him. He's going to target him and target him until he is off. Stupid by Morelos again to get involved, like we said, but exactly what you said, Derek. When we seen it at first, we weren't sure it was happening, but when we look back on replays to actually see what Brown done, it was quite incredible for a professional just to basically go out and try and pull that off to get a reaction. It is quite incredible, and it's just sheer desperation by the coaching staff and by him as well. So, but unfortunately, Morelos did have to go off because of it, because I think Steven Gerrard knew that there was maybe a chance that he could have got sent off.
I think you're right there. You know, there is obviously, that was clear. He did get subbed off on the back of his booking, because there obviously is that kind of psychological aspect. Was, you know, that can we trust him to stay in the park? That's undeniable there. But I think in this instance, his booking, to be fair, I think through the nature of the tackle, we are, To me, Duffy's accelerated into it. He's off the ground. His left leg comes in there. I mean, he could really hurt Kent there. To me, that's a straight red. If somebody does that to one of my mates or one of my teammates, I'm expecting a reaction. So, you know, the fact that Morelos, you know, charges into that, I think you need a bit of that. I think you talk about Walters teams in the 90s. You know, if somebody had done that to, for example, say, Ali McCoyster or whatever, you can bet a bottom dollar a Stuart McCall or a John Brown or whoever would have been in there getting involved. I think there's a time and a place for it. And in a high kind of pressure game, I can understand why he got in. And to me, his booking was more, same with McGregor, it was that whole, right, there's been a bit of stramash here. I've got to, you know,
got to
and it's to me it felt like it was a yellow card and a yellow card just for the sake of it. When you actually, if you look at the instant, you could, if you wanted to go and book anybody for getting involved, because there was numerous players there, but I don't think there was too much in that. But you're right, the aspect of who Morelos is and the fact that he's card marked, you're right, we did have to take him off in the back of it. But I think he was just looking after a mate in that instance, to be honest.
Well, as Dave said, he did come off a minute later in the 76th minute, Morelos off Eton on. 81st minute, poor defending by Celtic on the edge of their box, ending in Eton picking up the ball, turning and having a shot just over the bar. And the last two bits of play in the game, 85th minute, Kent off, Zungu on, and 92nd minute, Aribo off and Barker on. And we rounded out 1-0 winners. So contrast this with the last game where Celtic had no shots on target and they lost the game. This game, we had no shots on target and still won the game. Just so brilliant, and absolutely delighted. Granted, it wasn't the best of performances, but when you can still grind out results, get the win, whether it be luck or not, it's, you know, incredible, and it's certainly the mark of champions.
Psychologically for us, Derek, it's huge, isn't it? It's massive. It shows that we can play a match, one of the biggest games of the season, against the next best team in the league, which they are, and, you know, not play well, not get a shot on target, but our defence is solid. Stokes them playing, as you say, they had their three chances in the first half, and in the second half they were like a shadow of the team, basically because we stopped them playing and we got a grip of the game. And you know, for us to win the game and not even get a shot on target is incredible, and it's just a massive psychological boost for them. It'll make them all really, you know, totally, you know, up for the next game as well, which is going to be a huge one as well. But just that knowing that the defence can basically win the game for the team as well, and the goalkeeper is massive. And we've seen it many times before. We keep referencing Walter Smith's team. You know, we've done that. We used to do that loads and loads of occasions, especially against Celtic, where our defence could really, you know, take it, everything, and our goalkeeper could take everything that they threw at us, and they couldn't score. It's demoralising for them, and it's just a massive, massive boost for us.
Yeah, 100% to go into a game with that importance. And let's be honest, these games are the most important games of the season to the fans. You know, we can say what we like, but to have not had their best performance and still have the 3 points and extend that gap at the top to a point where now we've heard week in, week out about, oh, you know, but it's only so many points because there's three games in hand and all that. And that's all very well, and that's true. But to have a gap now, let's take the games in hand out, 10 points, and know that with two Old Firm games to come, we still have margin for error. It was huge for us. Psychologically, it was a massive swing in the season, you know. Vital 3 points.
Just on note as well, after the game, the Union Bears put some sort of firework display outside of Ibrox when it was all dark and all that kind of thing. I don't for an instance think it was out of malice at all, but I just think, given the way the team are doing, the playing just now, we're going one game at a time, we should have treated this game like any other game. And also for the fact that the day it was as well, given the fact that it was the 50th anniversary of the Ibrox disaster, you were firing fireworks towards the main stand. It just wasn't in the best taste for me. I know I might get some heat for this, but I just felt, as much as there was no malice intended, it could have been done a wee bit differently, certainly on another day.
I agree. I think you take the aspect of the fact we're in the middle of a pandemic. Now, again, you want to draw comparisons. You know, we were obviously critical with, you know, the Celtic supporters gathering outside the stadium and stuff. We've got a responsibility, you know, to kind of paint ourselves in a good light. And while, yeah, you're right, there's no sort of malice intended in it. I think it was all timed with the day it was, as you say, and just the fact that it just gives people that opportunity to just paint us in a wee bit of a negative light. You know, let's hold our powder, and let's get this out of the line, and then you know, start thinking about things like, you're right, we've not won anything yet, and that's important. You know, so I think it was all timed for me.
Yeah, just like you said there, Craig, I'm always one for do everything you can not to give anybody an excuse to put the boot in to the club, and it keeps happening, unfortunately. Just exactly like what you guys said, I think this could have waited, especially with the day that it was. You know, the remembrance, poor timing, exactly the same as you guys. And, you know, let's just leave it the now and concentrate and winning the league, and then, you know, you can party after it. So try not and get any negative comments for us or get us. Just go about things quietly and professionally at the moment is the way that I would go.
Yeah. So that leaves us in the league table. Played 22, won 28, drawn 2, lost 0, scored 57, still only conceded 5. Goal difference plus 52, and we're on 62 points. As we said in the last game, this is our confirmed points. We're 19 points ahead of Celtic. It's not 10 points, it's 19 points. Granted, they've got 3 games in hand. They still need to win them. What's going to be coming next to them, we don't know, which we'll get into in a minute. We're 22 better goal difference than them. 23 ahead at Aberdeen, they're in third place. They've got 2 games in hand as well. So, fantastic in the league there. I still can't believe we've only conceded 5. I think that's 18 clean sheets as well. It's incredible. Games to come, as Craig mentioned earlier, Sunday the 10th of January, away to Aberdeen in the Premiership. That's at 1500. On Sunday the 17th of January, away to Motherwell in the Premiership. That's a midday kickoff. Saturday the 23rd of January at home to Ross County in the Premiership, that's another 3 o'clock kickoff. And to round out January, Wednesday the 27th of January away to Hibs in the Premiership, that's a 7:45 in the night kickoff. So I fully reckon by the end of January we'll know fully where we are standing in the title race. If we can win all these games, it's going to be mega, especially the next game, actually, because, you know, Aberdeen, they've moved ahead of Hibs, I think, now. Hibs are on a downwards decline, but their best games that they played of the season were against us, fully enough, yet they get hammered 3-0 off Livingston at the weekend. So we'll just need to wait and see how it pans out.
Livingston are the form team now, Derek. I think they've won like 7 games in a row or something like that. They've won Livingston, so they're one of the form teams now. But as you say, Hibs have dropped form a bit, and now it's Aberdeen. And we all know what Aberdeen will be like when they play us. They'll be well up for it, so it's going to be another really difficult game. But again, I'm hoping that some of the players that have been, you know, off form, I'll start to come back to form. We've not been using their fullbacks like what we did no long ago. I'm just hoping with the fact that Craig's on the podcast, because you know how he's James Tavernier's number one fan. every time that Craig comes on, James Tavernier goes through a real sort of purple patch, and he's, you know, absolutely outstanding. So he's been quite quiet over the last few games. So I'm hoping and praying, since you've been on, Craig, that he'll go on and have another few outstanding games like we've been used to, you know, for the other parts of the season. So that's what I'm hoping for.
Well, I think we touched on earlier, he did change the game with his decisive pass for the red card for the weekend. But certainly, nah, he's due a wee goal and another man of the match performance. I'm pretty confident going up to Pittodrie, he'll be up for it. But so will we, and we talk about the points margin. What more incentive do you need to extend the gap to 22 points before they kick another ball, you know what I mean? So that's all the incentive we need. And again, that the pressure that ramps on them, especially with what's going on in the background this week, is massive.
Yeah, so that's a great segue, because that's the next point I was going to come on to. Now, for a Rangers podcast, we don't normally talk about Celtic. However, this has direct effect on us, so it's pertinent to do it. Obviously, after the game, there was the usual bunker nuts that were, you know, claiming that we weren't a good team at all and we were just an average team. Well, what does that make you if you are 19 points adrift and we're an average team? We were certainly average to poor on the day, absolutely, but our form and the way we've played all season so far, you cannot turn around and say we're an average team. There was one podcast on YouTube directly, they were just hilarious. Now, I find it sad when Celtic fans come onto our podcast and comment on it, but this was posted on all the Rangers Twitter feeds, and they were absolutely hilarious. Unintentionally, because they were just coming away with the most bunker nuttish shit you've ever heard in your life, but they were hilarious. I think they were called something like going for 10 in a row, and they've had to quickly delete their Twitter page and scrap their podcast because they were getting just so much abuse, quite rightly so, from the Rangers fans. The one surprising thing was that there was a lot of Celtic fans conceding the league. They've resigned themselves to the fact that it's over. It's too big a gap. The way Celtic are playing has been poor. Even if they're playing well, they're still getting beat, obviously, in this game. And they just find it too much to overcome. And I don't know if that's them trying to use a bit of reverse psychology. But certainly, I don't know about you two, but the league's certainly not over in my eyes.
We're trying not to be overconfident, Derek. I think the fact the way that last game went and we still won, a lot of Rangers fans are, you know, reveling it. I think because that we've maybe seen what's happened the last two seasons going into the second part of the season, a lot of Celtic fans out there are hoping it's going to be the same, and obviously we're hoping it's not going to be the same. I am keeping my feet in the ground totally just because I'm quite superstitious that way. I'm not saying much at all. But as you say, I think there could be a bit of reverse psychology, because I've not seen a lot of Celtic fans out there that have been saying that it's definitely over and all of that, you know. But I think they are more worried. They're kind of in the position that we were in last season, going into a bad patch, that I don't think that they're overconfident and their team are going to win, you know, all their games that they've got outstanding. And we were the same last season, because we were saying there's still two old Firm games in the season before that, but we were still struggling, and I think that they're going to be exactly the same. We just have to concentrate on us, and as I say, we've got these hard games coming up as well, so I'm certainly not going to get carried away, but I just think for the fact that last game and the way it went, I think psychologically for our team it's going to be huge, absolutely massive.
So sounds cliche, but you're right, you take one game at a time. But you know, certainly for me, and you know, my feet are firmly in the ground, and you know, sort of statements like this can come back and haunt you. But that game was huge there at the weekend. I cannot see how we don't get it out of the line for here. I don't believe they believe that they can drag it back. When you hear words like we'll keep going until it's mathematically impossible coming out of the squad, like we've seen that movie before. I think we'll get in the front and extend our lead. I think the next month, as we touched on earlier, is huge. We start one game at a time with Aberdeen, and I see, I can see us running away here. I think we need to keep our feet in the ground as supporters, and it's difficult, but I think within the squad, within the group, they know they're on the verge of something special. I think getting out of the League Cup could now turn out to be a wee bit of a blessing. It's sort of a couple of less fixtures to play, especially with the fact we think we forget we're still in the Europa League. But now listen, batting down the hatches, boys. There'll be fireworks in my backyard in a few months' time.
So here, the controversial thing about it is we all knew that Celtic had manufactured a winter break for themselves to go out to a training camp in Dubai. They got the SPFL to move the Hibs game, which is why they're playing on this coming Monday, without Hibs' agreement. I cannot believe for the life of me why Hibs have not made a massive stink about it. They did initially when they found out about it, but they haven't followed it up by the look of it. So there's a few points I want to make about this. Firstly, why? There's absolutely no need for it whatsoever. They've got the second best training facilities in Scotland. Most teams would absolutely kill for that. Secondly, most people would kill just to get abroad just now, just for some a wee bit of away time. But we can't because of COVID restrictions. Thirdly, they've got three games in hand, yet they've got the audacity to fuck off out the country when there was space to get one, if not two, of these games played. Fourthly, it's extremely bad optics for them being 19 points adrift and they've just been beaten in the last Old Firm game there. We're in the middle of the pandemic and they're swanning off out the country. Fifthly, if the last 4 points I've made weren't enough, pictures of them have obviously emerged from being around the pool with members of the public, not socially distancing, and then pictures of them in a bar, again with members of the public and not social distancing. St Mirren and Kilmarnock had to forfeit games because they were car sharing and not having adequate distancing at team dinners, as well as not adequate distancing on the team bus. Yet Celtic feel their players, this is acceptable for them to be in and around bars. The Scottish Government made a statement yesterday, I think it was, and saying that I hope the SFA are going to be looking into this. Celtic then immediately made a statement on the back of that, talking about the fact that they had consulted through the joint response group and had got permission from the Scottish Government and the bodies regarding this. I had a point last night on Twitter about the wording of that. It was very cute because they said through the joint response group. So to me, that's implying that they never directly spoke to the Scottish Government about this. It was all done through the joint response group. As a point I made on Twitter last night, you look at the members of the joint response group. It's four members consisting of Rod Petrie, the SFA chief doctor, chief medical advisor, and two other football-related people. And then they've got a background camp of other specialised people in relation to this. No government officials whatsoever. Interestingly, today, Nicola Sturgeon confirmed that it's not the government that would sanction this, it would be the SFA. And she did confirm that they gave advice to the SFA in November regarding this, which is what Celtic said is they had organised this November. So it's again proving my point that Celtic did not get permission from the government for this. They got permission from the joint response group, who don't have anybody from the government. So it makes you wonder, what the hell have Celtic told the joint response group? And what the hell have the joint response group told Celtic? Because Celtic have stated that a large part of this was R&R. Well, as I said in one of my points, everybody wants some R&R out the country just now. It's extremely, extremely shocking from Celtic. And something has to be done about this. And whether it is, I don't know.
Derek, I think I've actually read that there's not going to be absolutely no action taken for the SFA. The SFA, I think earlier on, have stated that they're not going to be putting any type of investigation in there, and they've not got anything to answer, which is an absolute disgrace with everything that's going on. I don't care what, I mean, I've actually seen loads of their fans on defending it all, and I'm trying to look at it through, you know, obviously not being somebody that hates that team and supporting the rivals and all that, and I'm trying to think sort of more clearly on how I would feel if it was my team that had done that, had just been beaten, were 19 points clear, had been pumped out of the Champions League, had finished bottom of my Europa League group, were out of the cup. And I would be absolutely raging. I would be saying, look, these players should be getting a grip of their cell and saying, no, we've decided to cancel it with everything that's going on in the world and with the fact, you know, that we have got these games in hand. We're wanting to try and get, you know, the players are desperate to get in and play. You know, and then you see how everything that's going on. It's completely farcical. And as I say, I'm sure you can maybe quote me on this, but I'm sure that there has been something for the SFA to say that there's no case to answer for and there's not going to be any investigation.
I think it's just as simple as one of them. Where just read the room, guys. You know, read the room. We're in the middle of a global pandemic, like you say. People have had holidays to the caravan in Scotland cancelled this year. We've got an elite football club away for a jolly in Dubai. It's not right. And listen, I just sit and go, it's just their bad karma. You know, they paint themselves as this club for everyone, and you know the sort of bastions of good practice. Well, you know, again, it's just another example of how you just leave them to it and they just show themselves in a poor light. So, you know, just let them crack on, guys. Let's not worry about whether there's any implications, to be honest. Let's just focus on yourselves, let it play out, you know, see how it unfolds, and let's just concentrate, as you guys touched on,
the next game at the weekend against Aberdeen, and that'll be all the punishment they need when we get this title out of the line if we keep on going the way we're going. So let's just keep it Rangers, I think, you know.
I certainly see your point, but when you've got Celtic fans, and I can quite imagine there's been discussions about it, talking about null and void the league, you know the narrative. Because if this is true that the SFA are not going to look into this at all, even though that folk have posted up the rule book about going trips abroad, and they've clearly broken a number of rules, who's to say this null and void isn't going to come into play and they're going to try it? And this is what the crux of the matter is, because we called for that last year, quite rightly so, I feel. And what did we get told? No, we're just deciding the league just now. So I don't want to win a league with Celtic getting points deducted. I don't want to win a league by just saying, right, no, we're ending it here. But what I certainly don't want to happen is for them to turn around and say null and void, and then that's just it. Because it never happened last year.
No, I think, though, that, again, you've got to look at where we've came with regards to COVID. So we're saying that Elite Sport's safe. You know, there's a wider implications of this season in terms of there's the Euros coming up. So we'll very much have to follow the lead of, you know, what's happening with other leagues. I think we went early on, you know, oh, we can't finish this season, whatever. But now, you know, there's the wider implication with the national team being in the Euros. There's also the president there that the null and void is no, it's no on the table. You know, it's we finish the season when it's safe to do so, or we award on a points per game basis. Now, I get you, I don't want to win the league that way, but I genuinely don't think it will come to that when you've got the, you know, and I can't believe we're talking about the First Minister of Scotland again. This is two podcasts in a row, but she's coming out and saying that, you know, the league must continue. The football sport can continue. But if we follow the guidelines, then I think that kind of answers your fears. I think the league goes on. And you've got to look at Aberdeen. You know, do we honestly think that they're going to be okay with a league now getting completed when, let's be realistic here, where we're currently at the moment, they'll have aspirations to make the Champions League. There's a second Champions League spot. So they'll be looking, going, right, we could get into that position. You've got Hearts, who've been on the flip side of it last year, where they get relegated, sitting top of their table. There's too much at play now, and I don't think there's a concern there. I think that will be fine. I think the only thing that will be interesting to see is what unfolds in terms of, is there going to be any punishment or ramifications in terms of, you know, COVID. But I think the season will be complete. That's no really end of my thinking at this point.
I wish I shared your optimism with that one, but well, as you said, we'll wait and see how it plays out. So we'll move now on to the classic match.
And there it is, the final whistle's gone. Rangers have won the European Cup Winners' Cup.
So Dave, what classic match have you got for this time?
Derek, was from 14 years almost now, 2007, and it was a trip that Rangers had to Rugby Park to take on Kilmarnock. It was played in the 23rd of February 2007. Rangers team on that day, quite a few players that we know very, very well. Of course, our current goalkeeper was in goals for Rangers back then, Alan McGregor. Our defence that day was Alan Hutton, Davey Weir, the late Ugo Ekiog and Ian Murray at left back. We had Hamdani, Kevin Thompson, Barry Ferguson, Charlie Adam in midfield. And up front for Rangers, we had Chris Burke and Chris Boyd. Kilmarnock on that day was Coombe, Murray, Fraser, Wright, Greer, Ford, Fowler. He had a lot to play in this game. Stephen Naismith, of course, Dodds, Quinn and Wales. So starting the game off, early chance for Rangers. Hamdani with a great ball up to Boyd at the edge of the box. He sort of flicks it down for Barry Ferguson, who has a snapshot at the edge of the box, just wide of there. But then Rangers on the 6th minute had the chance to go 1-0 ahead when we were awarded a penalty.
Ferguson for Boyd. Boyd Ford went across, and the penalty is given. Well, I have to say my initial reaction was Simon Ford played the ball. Look at the reaction of the Commander players. They're absolutely furious. It's a great run from Boyd. He plays the ball, no doubt about that. It's a risky decision to put your foot in there. And I think Simon Ford plays the ball. He's outside as well.
Here comes Chris Boyd. And here comes 1-0 to Rangers. Boyd scores against his old club yet again. But it's nothing personal. It's business. And his business is goal scoring.
Let me tell you two things. It's, first of all, it's a terrific penalty. It really is, but it's an absolutely symbolic decision to give it in the first place. Walter Smith, Ali McCoy is absolutely delighted. Just the start they wanted this match, but it's been handed to them in a plate because of this. Simon Ford reads it well. It's a good run from Boyd. He plays the ball. He's outside the box as well.
Chris Boyd was sort of running through just at the edge of the box, just inside the box, brought down by the Kilmarnock defender. 50-50 here. Look back on it. Some referees would have gave it, some wouldn't. It was quite a soft one, but we really weren't caring. Rangers weren't awarded the penalty. Chris Boyd stepped up, fired low, passed Coombe into the goal to make it 1-0 to Rangers. And then we really should have had a second goal straight away. Charlie Adam puts in a free kick, the right-hand side of the box. Barry Ferguson well onside. He heads past Coombe into the net. The referee, for some reason, gave it offside. It was well onside at that point, so still 1-0 to Rangers at that point. And then more Rangers pressure. Hamdani out to Charlie Adam. He crosses in a fantastic ball to Barry Ferguson. He made a late run and just prods the ball just past the post. Really unlucky there as well. So, as I say, still 1-0 to Rangers at that point. But then on the 24th minute, we were forced into a sub where Ugo Ekiok had to come off and we had to bring on Carl Svensson. Yes, remember Carl Svensson? I'm still getting nightmares about him. But he had to come on. Thankfully, Davey Weir alongside him to guide him through. And then, thankfully, on the 30th minute, Rangers deservedly get their second goal of the game and also Chris Boyd.
Ferguson. Burke, Hutton's cross, and Chris Boyd, he does it again. 2-0 for Rangers, and Boyd has trouble in store for his former club once more.
It really is, but look at Rocco Quinn in that left-hand side. He doesn't track back for Kilmarnock. It's lazy defending. He leaves the time and the space. It's a brilliant ball, and the keeper has got absolutely no chance, but it's lazy defending from Rocco Quinn. That's too late to stop the cross. The cross was an excellent one. Well, the finish from somebody like Chris Boyd, proven goal scorer.
It was a cross in again for Charlie Adam, who was having a great game from the right-hand side. And there were the easiest of headers. Chris Boyd, completely unmarked, right in the centre of the box, heads it past Coombe in to make it 2-0 to Rangers. Kilmarnock's first real chance not long after that, Stevie Naismith. The ball drops to him inside the box. He shoots wide. You know, he really should have done better there, but thankfully it was well off. And then again, Kilmarnock putting pressure on Rangers right at the end of the first half with a great save from Alan McGregor right at the feet of Stephen Naismith to deny him. It looked as if it was a certain goal, but a really brave diving save by McGregor to keep it 2-0 at half-time to Rangers. Into the second half, the 46th minute, Kevin Thompson had to come off and Nacho Novo came on. This was a great move again because it caused so many problems. Not long after that, Murray on the left wing, he plays the ball out to Charlie Adam further up. He plays a great through ball to Nacho Novo. Novo runs through, nutmegs his man into the box, shoots, and it's saved by Coombe. Falls straight to the feet of Chris Burke. All he had to do was tap it in. For some reason, he hits it. The Kilmarnock defender gets back and he hits it straight to the defender on the line. I don't know how he missed that one. Unbelievable. And then another great chance for Barry Ferguson. Alan Hutton, a fantastic run right down the right wing. He sees Ferguson making the run into the box. He plays a low pass, sort of through ball to Ferguson. He runs through, only the keeper to beat, but unfortunately it drags his shot just wide. Nacho Novo then on the left midfield, a great ball down the wing to Murray, who'd kept running, a low cross to Chris Boyd at the edge of the box. He turns and shoots just over the bar, so Rangers really trying to go for the third. But then Kilmarnock actually got themselves a penalty. It was a push by Hutton in the box. To be fair, it did look like a penalty, and there Fowler steps up, but an incredible diving save by Alan McGregor down the bottom left, and it's cleared away. So Fowler not having a great game. 59th minute.
Oh, Nacho Nova's in here. This really could wrap it up. And Nova, another penalty. Incredible. Doogie McDonald points to the spot for the third time in this match.
Well, I actually thought Fowler did well here. And we're going to see it again, but I thought Fowler defended well. I thought it was him. Showed good strength as he gets in. Well, it's a shoulder charge, but Nova goes down. Well, it's just using his strength, I think. He nudges him out of the way. Well, I just thought that was good strength. One or two may disagree with me, but I thought that was good strength from James Fowler there.
Penalties galore. It's Chris Boyd. It's a hat-trick. Another perfect penalty for a natural-born goalscorer.
Well, unbelievable. An unbelievable start to this second half. Come on, I've just missed a penalty. Chris Boyd steps up, composed. Never any doubt that was going in the back of the net for me.
Barry Ferguson in the halfway line, ball up to Chris Boyd. First time ball through to Nacho Novo. He's through and goal, bundled over by Fowler. And it's a penalty again to Rangers. Fowler absolutely raging. Chris Boyd steps up, chance for his hat-trick, and fires Julie bottom left into the goal. Hat-trick for Boyd, 3-0 to Rangers and cruising. Just then, about the 73rd minute, Kilmarnock forcing Rangers to defend as they were going for a consolation goal. And they managed to score a very messy goal by the Rangers' defence standards.
DiGiacomo will take this corner. Knocked on by Greer. McGregor under pressure, and it sneaked in. Kilmarnock have a goal back. McGregor protests.
Well, it's sloppy from Rangers. There's a decent ball into that front post. It's flicked on. They make a nuisance of themselves. McGregor doesn't deal with it. I don't know what he's complaining for. He has to deal with that. It's Naismith who just backs in. I don't think Naismith does a great deal wrong there. I don't see anything wrong with that. It's a perfectly good goal for Kamala. Okay, it's a scramble.
Corner was flicked up high in the box to Naismith, right in front of McGregor. I don't know how he got a header in, but McGregor bundled over. Really messy, but the ball ended up in the back of the net. That made it 3-1 still, though, to Rangers. And then right at the end of the game, great chance for Hutton. Ball into Boyd, who shoots and saves it. Come back to Hutton just with a tap in. But he, just like what Chris Burke had done in the first half, he hits it straight off the defender on the line and out for a corner. But Rangers rounded the game out. Excellent performance. They really should have scored a barrel load of goals there. Charlie Adam, for me, was a standout. Some of the balls that he put in to the box of Rangers were absolutely outstanding. And again, I think we can all remember that one quite clearly because it wasn't that long ago, but always great to go back and look at previous games, especially that was when Walter returned for the second time after the disastrous tenure of Paul Le Guin. And when you look at some of the players that he brought, you know, he brought Alan McGregor back in, and look, you know, what happened from there. That was when McGregor really became the sort of dominant goalkeeper for Rangers. Also, guys like, you know, Hutton, and, you know, the first thing that Smith did was get the defence sorted, and that's what put us on steady footing from then on. So, if you get the chance to go back, please do go back and look at it. So it was a great game to watch.
I think you touched on the game now. So what it was for me was obviously it's the kind of second coming of Walter, which I think, you know, given his resources and what he came back to, you know, his second spell at Rangers was nothing short of remarkable.
Yep.
And that was really the start of that kind of time. You know, as I say, you touched on, he sorted the defence out. He got the goalkeeping situation sorted because we had went between, obviously, that disaster. It was Lino Letizia, I think.
Yeah.
Kloss had a wee turn as well, but wasn't fit. And then, obviously, McGregor. And then, obviously, bringing in Eki Og and Davy Weir. Gives that sort of insurance, and then lo and behold, the good players, the creative players we had in the team kind of thrive off the back of that. But the overriding thing for me there was obviously your hat-trick for Chris Boyd. I think the time it sometimes feels like it's not been as kind as it should have been to Boyd. He was an excellent striker, really, really top class. Brilliant goal scorer. Deadly, you know, dead balls, headed goals, you name it, he had it all. And in Walter's time, he was really key to your success, you know, in terms of cup finals and whatever. And it kind of sparked quite a wee purple patch in his Rangers career. I've been fortunate enough to meet him a few times and work with him, work for him, for Five Stars. And he's a really, really nice guy, and he does a lot of great work for charity. But, no, a great player. So we should look back on that and appreciate him, you know.
Who was the co-commentator, Dave, on that?
I can't actually think. Derek, who are you?
Because he was apoplectic with rage, you know, quite a few times with Rangers getting penalties, wasn't he? And so we'll be back with another classic match in the next podcast. So we'll go into the news. Not a great deal of news to talk about this episode. Firstly, Rangers have teamed up with Fortrade as our official online trading company, and I remember seeing the adverts for them against Celtic, so certainly the commercial department's working their magic again.
Yeah.
The only other bit of main Rangers news I've got here is Club 1872 have confirmed that they've purchased 1.25 million shares as part of their agreement with Dave King, taking their share holding to just over 5%. They've also agreed with Dave King that any funds raised in the first 6 months of 2021 via either legacy or standard donations can be made available to purchase normal shares in the club should the club have a share issue. And Dave King, on the back of this, has agreed to extend the period that he's offering his share to them by another 6 months. So certainly that's good in a sense that there was a lot of calls for Club 1872 putting their money directly into the club, which if they have another share issue, that's what it'll do. But again, it's a good thing. But as well, if you've signed up as part of the legacy on the back of the Dave King thing, specifically for the Dave King thing, then it's just going to put that further down the line. And is that really what you signed up for? So there's two ways of looking at that. It's a good thing in one sense. It might be a bad thing in another sense, but certainly it's all going towards the same thing at the end of the day, and that's getting shares in Rangers. So we'll see how that pans out. The last piece of news here as well is I've got, despite an internal investigation by Ross County finding absolutely nothing, Michael Gardine has been cited regarding his alleged comments made against one of our players in the game they played against us a few weeks ago. The hearing for that is on the 21st of January, so interesting that he's been cited, but his own club couldn't find anything wrong.
Aye, I know. It's I don't know if that's going to come down to whatever the referee heard or thought he heard, or you know, things that were that were passed on, but we'll wait and see what happens there. Derek, with that, it's quite a strange one, and I'm sure Ross County will plead for the player's case there, but quite a strange one. We still don't know. We've heard what a lot of people thought, you know, got said there, but I'm not going to say what it was, or you know, until we hear exactly what happens, you know, with the findings and at the report. But as you say, quite strange that Ross County have found nothing, but it is still going, you know, for an investigation. So we'll wait on that one.
You seen the Gerrard's even reaction on that day? Kind of suggest that, you know, potentially something has gone on. So I think it getting cited is maybe not a bad thing. I think Scottish football's track record with internal investigations isn't brilliant. So the whole let the government body do their job for a change, you know.
Yep.
So, Racing Australia takes action over sexually explicit racehorse names at Aussie Track. Racing Australia certainly wasn't happy when the names of two racehorses were blared over the speakers at a recent race event. Deakin Racecourse on the outer suburbs of Brisbane rounded out 2020 with a couple of races. It was all fine and dandy until the 8th race saw the arrival of Lovin' De Cock. The racehorse eventually finished fourth in that battle, and it's not hard to imagine how the name was yelled out. If the embarrassing name wasn't enough, the following race saw Get On De Cock finish second. While race fans were bursting at the seams when they were looking at the race guide, Racing Australia insisted the names were actually pronounced Lovin' De Co and Get On De Co.
Aye, right, okay.
So that's as good as it's got this episode.
I'm just I actually think, Derek, that takes us back to, I think it was our first ever pod when we were coming away with some of the strange names that we used to think of. Remember, we had Randy Raper, the American football player, and all these guys. So it's just another one to think back to our original pod there. But there you go.
It's like that classic episode of The Chase. If you go on YouTube, you'll get it. And it's the Fanny Schmeller. what was his name? Andy Kapp. What's Andy Kapp known as in Germany? And it's Willy Wacker.
Super.
Well, I just want to round out the podcast with this piece of a blog from a Celtic blogger, because it is absolute comedy gold. So it's titled, "Well, now this title is tainted if won by them for a what?" It doesn't even make sense, this. Basically, the reasons why this title will be tainted if we win it. Number one, the impact of COVID has affected Celtic more than any club in the world.
Oh, my God.
We have not passed any international break without a player being affected. The press held back information about one of our players breaking protocols to allow him to be available and get our games postponed. The Scottish Government were fast acting to ensure this happened. Were they? I don't remember that. The press and government then withheld information about the player doing the same. Again, did that actually happen? Number two, there has been a concerted and ill-hidden attempt to ensure that Sevco scum get as many decisions as possible. The Scottish Football Authorities, specifically the referees, have ensured that they can assault players' opponents without recourse. Morelos today was an example, and it would not surprise me if this club went full season without a penalty being awarded against them. Number three, they have been allowed to financially dope in a way that borders, at a minimum, on corruption with the authorities and their failure to install financial fair play rules. Number four, their captain has stated that having no fans in the stadium has actually helped them. That's how poor they are. Number five, they have had no challenge this season for all the reasons above, but also given our poor form and bad luck, which we have had many instances. They claim every season for four that they were challenging and coming for us, but now this is the first challenge we've had, except we haven't challenged this season, so they've had a free run at it.
You couldn't mark their necks with a blowtorch, mate. That's all I can say. They have had just even having to look at last season, which I hate to get into again, but how they were awarded a league trophy last season, you know, because of a vote through email, you know, I mean, that just says it all. And I think they forget that. I think they all forget also where or what's happened to us over the last nine, 10 years. They have had no challenge whatsoever. They should be so far ahead. We've had it thrown in our faces by so many people that we need to spend $100 million, you know, to challenge them again and stuff like that. Absolute nonsense. It's the scary thing for me, Derek, is that there will be thousands and thousands of them that will believe everything that blocker's saying. That's how Mad Phil Five Names is done so well for him, because they all actually believe what he puts out there. It's incredible stuff. It's great that we are living in their heads 24/7. And when we do eventually win 55, it is just going to be the biggest meltdown that you've ever seen in Scottish football, without a shadow of a doubt.
I mean, that's delicious. Absolutely delicious. Just drink in the tears. It's just fantastic. Eh? Get your tinfoil hats on, boys. when we get 55, it's going to be beautiful.
I think we've spoke too much about Celtic in this podcast.
We have.
Turn into one of them. So on that note, we will end the podcast. As ever, if you want to check out our stuff, you can go to our website, which is iReadyPodcast.wordpress.com, and there you can find all previous episodes and match reactions. Craig, do you want to plug your stuff?
No, listen, just if anybody's listening away, fully fear no foe on Facebook. What we do is just share pods like this where you've got Rangers fans talking about the club and having a good time while we're doing it. So That's what we're all about, sharing the fan content. So no, go for it. And again, thanks again, boys, for having me on. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Been great again. Thank you very much.
Don't worry, you'll get the check in the post.
When's my hat trick ball coming? That's what I want to know.
Exactly. That's right.
We don't have even any merch to give you or anything like that. We're not one of these podcasts. One of the few that doesn't.
So if there's any companies out there that want to get us merchandise for no, you know, that we didn't hate to pay for, then only fire in, lads, not a problem.
If anybody's want to send Dave a free George Foreman grill or something like that, so
exactly, aye,
garage in this inclement weather, we'll take it.
Dave will settle for a can of Pepsi Max, to be honest.
Exactly, I would, to be fair, aye. Just anything at all. Just before we go, Derek, the one thing that we have forgot to cover, and it was more for you. I noticed a picture that you posted on Facebook there with your wee girl. I noticed that your hair is getting even longer than what I thought. So obviously the barbers and that are closed, so if you're looking for anybody to braid your hair, you just have to wait till next week, and I'm sure that there's a big Irish guy in Glasgow that'll do that for you, no problem.
Oh, he's on his way back now, apparently. So
there he is. You better get booked in, mate.
So on that note, goodbye.
Take care, folks. Bye-bye.
Cheerio.
And the stadium erupts in red, white and blue. You've never seen anything like it.
Let's go.
So, we've not been beat by a good Rangers team. We've not been beat by a good Rangers performance. We've been beat by an OG by ourselves against a mediocre, as I've said to you before, glorified pub team.
We are fucking world-class goalkeeper.
We've been beat by the establishment again as well. And we go on it so many times, and they hung bastards out there, gear. Always defeated, always cheated, never defeated. That's what I've heard in the past for A-Rats. Well, look at that today. How do you win a game? How do you win a game without a shot and goal? How's that possible? If any of you bastards are watching, phone up my number, text in, post a comment. How do you win a game without a shot and goal? And how can you still come out and defend your team after?